RadioInfluence.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You're listening to the Dark to Light podcast when you look at it with two fantastic people. We're talking about people I've known for a very long time, Tracy and Frank, two great friends, and they are hysterical people. Okay, the podcast is so funny. It's funnier than when Sleepy Joe tried to walk up the stairs of Air Force One. I call that Stair Force One. You know, he fell three times, the triple fall. We call it the triple fall. But Tracy and Frank give you the greatest information on a fantastic podcast. You're not going to find a better duo in the game today. The Dark to Light podcast. Give them a like. Give it a follow. Subscribe to the podcast today. You will not regret it. Believe me.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val and
Beans. So we just wrapped up a great interview with Sean, CaptainDeplorable45.com, and a bunch of other stuff he does. What'd you think?
I think it was a very well-rounded, awesome appearance. We had fun. We were able to talk local and national geopolitics, and it was great. It was so much bigger than what I thought it was going to be. I thought we were going to get a little bit of stand-up comedy today and just take a break from it all, but we were actually able to just interweave so many different things.
Yeah, for sure. And I always, I caught myself halfway through. My New York accent was just flying through this interview today because whenever I get around one or more, usually with you, I can tamp it down a little bit. But once I get two New Yorkers on the microphone with me, it's over. It's done.
Over.
It comes back out. It's like I grew up there. There's a guy that named Germ who has a fantastic podcast. He's out in South Africa. And he said to me, I need you to come back on the podcast because I need more of your accent. Because he's like, it's not like Brooklyn, but it's also not Southern. Because I've lost it, Frank. I've kind of meandered away from the full-fledged New York accent that I used to have.
Well, maybe sometimes it's a good thing if you're going to spend a little bit more time down south. You want to disarm people just a little bit.
They hate us down here, the Yankees. That's why I did it. I moved down here and I had a job where I had to sell to contractors. And as soon as I opened my mouth, it was immediately okay, goodbye. No. So I had to work on it, and I lost a lot of it until I don't know if it'll come. I thought I felt it, but we'll see. Anyway, without further ado, here is the amazing Captain Deplorable. So Frank, we have a very special guest with us today from CaptainDeplorable45.com. Sean is with us. Sean, hello.
Hey there. What's going on, folks? I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've played you on our show quite a few times. And when we got the email, you've heard us talk about it. I've talked about it. Frank's talked about it. We were excited because we're always doing such serious crap on the show. And we try to Frank brings the comic relief. But you really have lightened up quite a few episodes of the Dark to Light podcast.
I try to lighten up everywhere. I never thought that taking my friend through Arby's in Oneonta, New York, would result in over 7 million views on TikTok and people just laughing coast to coast. So it was cool to see that happen. And I'm looking forward to doing even more of that. I mean, I guess the more we can laugh at these days, with what's happening in Afghanistan, and that was not funny. And I didn't go anywhere with those jokes. But, whether it's the schools or the masking or the fact that the guy can't make it up the stairs, it's fun. It's fun to poke fun at him. And of course, when you could sound like the 45th president and you can make fun of Rosie O'Donnell, it's always a good time. So it's a great thing. And, Rosie is a disaster. She's a disgrace. So it's fun. You can switch right in. Whatever we do, Groundhog Day is today. Trump is going to see his shadow. That's coming out later. Four more years. You get the gist. Little sneak peek.
Sean, let me just say, when I first of all, many people were introduced to you when we saw these bits of yours. Is this what your trade is? Are you an impressionist comedian, or is this just something that you just have a natural talent for and just caught a wave?
Well, look, I mean, I've always been good at voices. I went to school for radio, right? So one of my nicknames in my college radio class before he took his life was Robin Williams. I did everybody's voiceovers. I'm kind of good at accents and some stuff like that. There was a New Year's Eve once a few years back, or I had a few people convinced that I was from Australia for two hours. I had drank so much that I was just tired of keeping the act up. And I looked at them, I was like, you two are idiots. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm not from Australia. If I was from Australia, why would I be in a bar in West Islip? You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't I be watching the ball drop in Times Square? Like, they're like, whoa, you're not from Australia. No. You know what I mean? So so I've always had that. By trade, is that what I do for a trip? Hey, listen, CaptainDeplorable45.com, it does pay the bills. It's nice doing these custom messages. And it's funny, my favorite part about it is, I mean, is it a trade? Is it a skill that I'm learning? Can it help? Yes. And it's exciting to see where this is all going. But my favorite thing about it is, like, I get these details. People will message me, hey, can you leave a voicemail for my husband? Can you leave a voicemail for my son? Can you talk about my dog? You know, I get all these people's life stories. And man, there's just so many, like, genuinely, you know, Americans who are genuinely in support of just something funny. And they can't turn on the nightly news unless it's Greg Gutfeld. They can't turn on late shows. They can't turn on SNL for anything funny because it's all woke. And people don't want to have, you know, this whole political nonsense into the comedy. They don't want that to seep in. And so I do bring it in, obviously, politically. But that's because it provides that kind of antidote, that pushback against the left-wing people. And all it is we hate Trump, we hate Trump, we hate Trump. So I come on as Trump, and I just do what Trump would do at a rally and just crap on all the liberals that nobody likes. Rosie, Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, you name them. We probably roasted them at some point on AOC, Brian Stelter. It's all low-hanging fruit, but it's fun. You know what I mean? And so it helps, I guess. This is the feedback that I get and that my team gets, and they send me. And so many people go, wow, it's just such a bright light. It's just dark times to provide a little laughter. And you just kind of said the same thing to me, too, that you go through all these serious things. I've listened to your show. You go through the serious stuff, real news. And eventually, it's nice to have that little kind of relaxing moment, laugh, lighten it up, and then get back into, you know, the stuff that really matters. Yeah, I don't want to think of myself as just a voice guy. I love the fan. That's not what I think anybody realizes what's going on. I like to think of it as here's a little brevity and a little levity and a little happiness and joy, but we have serious issues to look at as well. So I'll do a little voice about the southern border because there's things we can poke fun at, the wall and et cetera, you know, COVID and all that stuff that's going on the southern border. But it's the main purpose of it is to draw awareness, raise awareness about the serious issues that are happening in the country. There are some impersonators that go out there don't like Trump. Alec Baldwin, this other guy on SNL, they don't like Trump. I like Trump. I actually happen to like him a lot. And despite some of his, you know, drawbacks, you know, okay, maybe he tweets things he shouldn't tweet. I happen to have loved his Twitter. Maybe he says things he shouldn't have said, you know, they say it. I happen to love the fact that he has no filter. You know, so I love that personality. I'm from New York, Long Island. That's kind of who we are. To me, it just coming on and doing that, it just provides a little bit of a breath of fresh air. And if that turns into a trade, I'm all about it.
You know, I got to say, and Tracy would agree with me that when Trump was first, I wasn't actually even sold on Trump as a candidate until a few months before Election Day, 2016. I was like, I didn't know who the hell I was going to vote for at that point. But what I did know that is if we were going to get him in there, it would be so incredible to have a little taste of New York in the White House because of how abrasive it can be at times. I thought it would just be a dynamite combination for comedy. And when you brought up Rosie there, those are some of the clips that I loved playing on my show for well over 10 years already. Well, Rosie's a pig. When he would go after Rosie. Those are the greatest moments in television history, if you ask me. So, yeah, it really is something about the region. I knew that it was going to be a little bit of a hard sell for some people in this country because we live at a pace and it used to be a lot more of a stronger mindset here in New York. But we're a different breed. And it was going to be a little bit different kind of a take for the rest of the world in dealing with that kind of character. So it's great to see you have that kind of that, you know, the local understanding of what the spirit driving the whole thing is. Because it's one thing to be able to get the cadence of the voice down and stuff like that. It's another thing to actually have that fire already burning in your gut.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point about Trump that, yeah, I guess I get it. Some other people don't get it. If you're not from New York, you don't get it, right? Dan Bongino, he grew up, he was born in Smithtown, grew up in Queens. He always talks about it like he says it all the time. The Queens people aren't the tough Brooklyn people and they're not the rich Manhattan people. So they have to try and be a little bit of both. So they got to pop their chest out and act tough and they got to over-exaggerate. So the guy from Queens who bought his car for $15,000 tells his friend he bought it for $35,000, right? Because you want to sound like you have more money. That is Donald Trump. Billions with a B, dollars at the bank, okay? Billions with a B. You know, but maybe it wasn't billions with a B. Maybe it was millions with an M. And he didn't have as much. But you have to always over-exaggerate and be braggadocious to sell yourself to these people. Either you're going to sell yourself as a tough guy, you're going to sell yourself as a rich guy. And that's the Queens mentality. And it's funny you mentioned, Frank, that he wasn't your first choice in 2016. He wasn't mine either. I was a Rand Paul guy first. I was a Ted Cruz guy second. It took me really until the Al Smith dinner, about 13, 14 days before the election, to finally be completely 100% sold on Donald Trump, because he went right at Hillary Clinton and yep. He wasn't supposed to do it there. And I said, you know what? This guy's breaking all the rules and he's winning. And I'm all about rule breakers and I'm all about winners. And I got behind him. And it was the best decision I've made politically, I think, because he got in and he didn't disappoint me. He got in and day one, bang, we're rolling back regulations. We're rolling back red tape. We're opening things up. We're going to let the free market be free again. We're going to let free speech be free again. I mean, this country was amazing for 4 years. The amount of work that got done in 4 years. And now it's just within a year, it's gone right back to those pre-Trump, you know, pre-2016, just that just haze days, general malaise. It's disgusting. We need to change. And hopefully we see it in 22 and then later on in 24.
So you're not only a one trick pony here, mister. So, you know, you're doing other stuff now. Given I was an activist on Long Island before I moved down to South Carolina here, I understand the climate you're working in. For the most part, I know people have been more emboldened over the past couple of years. What do you do outside of this this really funny comic bit that had us both rolling on the floor? I love our promo. It's never going away, by the way. It's always going to be here forever. So just letting you know.
So excited. Well, the name Captain Deplorable came actually from my group, Loud Majority. And we started on Long Island. I used to wear this pirate hat. We did all these big Trump rallies in New York. We shut down Fifth Avenue in New York City one morning with 300 cars flagged up. We had over 10,000 cars go from the center of Long Island, you know, north, south, down all the way to Montauk on 27th Sunrise Highway. From Seaford to Montauk, Tracy, you know what towns I'm talking about.
I do.
But it went 55 miles long front to back, 55 miles long front to back, 10,000 cars the following week. 15,000 cars. And the name Captain Deplorable came because I wore the Captain Jack hat, and we put, you know, pin stickers and all sorts of stuff on there. It's a nice, big, beautiful Trump pirate hat. Steve Bannon happened to like it. I went on War Room once. He's like, are you wearing a tricorn hat? I said, yeah. He goes, that's a patriot hat. That's great. You know, we were rallying outside of one of our post offices in Bethpage because a truck with ballots left there and went missing.
I remember.
You know, Jesse Morgan, that story. Yeah. The Jesse Morgan story. You know what I'm talking about. So, you know, so the name came from Loud Majority, and Loud Majority is a group that I founded, and I had two others found it with me here. And we basically say, no, we know there's more of us than there are of them. Dan Bongino finally started saying that too, but we know there's more of us than there are of them. So why, if we're the majority, are we silent? There's no reason to stay silent. And we basically got people so comfortable with admitting that they were a conservative that 2020 election feeling, that electricity that surrounded Donald Trump, has now permeated the rest of the political environment here on Long Island. Nassau County, you remember Nassau County, Tracy, just elected a Republican county executive.
I know.
His name's Bruce Blakeman.
Yep.
His campaign essentially started on the back of my pickup truck. He spoke at a rally very early in his campaign on the back of my pickup truck with Lee Zeldin, who's the front runner for the GOP in the New York governor's race.
By the way, before you go on.
Yep.
Lee Zeldin was elected off of basically fireside chats in my dear friend's backyard with me in Suffolk County in Huntington before before I left New York, just letting you know. But keep going. Go ahead.
Amazing. Oh, we love Lee, and he's a good friend.
He is.
We're excited to see in 2022. But Blakeman's campaign essentially started in Bethpage. I mean, it was before that, but he spoke to a rally. We had about 1,000 people out there, and both him and Lee spoke off the bed of my pickup truck that day, and that was the first day I heard of Bruce Blakeman. Fast forward to November, Suffolk County election, new district attorney. We've taken a massive majority Republican in the Suffolk County legislature. You go over to Nassau, they elect a new district attorney because Kaminsky wasn't going to be the guy. That was the bail reform guy. And then you have in Nassau County, Bruce Blakeman. This guy is the only county executive in New York, fresh into office, Republican, standing up against Kathy Hochul saying, you know what? Nassau County is going to be normal. We're done. Executive orders, no more mandates, no enforcement. Choice back to the parents on the school board. We're done with this. And he's the only one standing up, but he's like New York's Ron DeSantis. And we keep rallying for him. We just did a rally a couple of weeks ago. We called it Back to Bruce, right? Instead of Back to Blue, Back to Bruce. And he came out. He spoke. He went there yesterday, press conference. 200, 300 patriots at a press conference. What is this? Right? Because people have finally had enough. And that's what this idea of the loud majority is. If you are the majority, if you truly believe that there are more of us who believe in liberty and freedom than there are of the communists and the socialists out there, don't let them steal the space by letting them be loud. We have to be loud back. And if we're all loud together, we know we have greater numbers. They don't stand a chance. And that's what's starting to happen here on Long Island. We've seen this place be liberated in such a way. I mean, Nassau County electing a Republican county executive hasn't happened in a long time. Laura Kern wasn't bad, but this guy comes in and he is just kicking ass out here. It's amazing. See, and it started with We the People.
See, I'd argue that the demographic on Long Island is much more conservative than liberal. I've always felt that way from you know, I grew up there. I mean, for goodness sakes, everybody I knew was conservative, but we've got this ridiculous policy. It was, I felt like it was a lost cause. I'm so glad to hear that there's people like you out there. Cause I get still calls from some of my friends out there that are like, yeah, we're doing this. Yeah, we're doing that. I'm like, good for you guys. What's going on with school boards you was talking about before the show?
Oh, school boards are a big deal. Obviously the education fight out here is huge. So, huge. Okay. masking in schools, diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is a new euphemism, a new term for critical race theory. There's so much going on in the state, New York State Board of Regents and their state education department and the New York State Teachers Union. They're all colluding with one another to force this down the throats of the kids. And this is the only message I have for both parents and non-parents. I'm not a parent. I don't have kids in the school district. But it's going to take more than just parents to fight this. And this is why it's so important. And this is why it was so important in Virginia and why it's going to be really important in New York. Education, if you have a child or don't have a child in a school district, not in a school district, whatever, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than just, well, I don't have a kid, so it's not my problem. No, it is your problem, because you have to understand, if you let this happen, if you're a taxpayer in, let's say, Levittown or East Islip or wherever you are on Long Island or wherever you are in the country, and you're paying property taxes and those are going to fund the schools. And what's happening in the schools is disgusting. Critical race theory, dividing kids by color, this hateful rhetoric, this anti-cop rhetoric, all of this, the masking and the distancing and the new normal, which is disgusting. All of that, you're funding that if you're a taxpayer.
Yep.
You should be upset whether you're a parent or not. You need to get in there and stop this, because what's happening, this is what the old KGB whistleblower Yuri Bezmenov said. We are going to infiltrate all the institutions in the United States, the KGB, the communists, right, the socialists, the left. And we're going to pump all of this socialist propaganda, the Soviet propaganda into the people. And what is the Soviet propaganda? It's critical theory, critical race theory, and all those different, you know, divide the classes, divide the races, make everybody fight amongst themselves so the people on top can just collect, get fat and stupid and happy, and that's it. The rest of us just fight against each other instead of fighting the real cause of the problem, which is government at this point, big government. So you watch what's happening, and Bezmenov said it takes one generation, maybe two generations of students. Right? You got one generation of students come through, they go through high school, they go through college, now all of a sudden they're 20-something years old. Now what do? They become the next teachers, they become the next congressmen, senators, they get into elected office, they entrench themselves in these institutions, and now you're stuck with them. and you're stuck with communists teaching the kids. And so that's why you're seeing the kids now, this is becoming indoctrination, not education. It's softening up the next generation of America's leaders. That's what's happening. It's softening them up. They don't know how to read. You know that 2% of the kids in Baltimore school district, okay, inner cities, 2% of them can actually read at their current grade level.
Yep.
That's insane. If you're a 10th grader, there's a 2% chance in Baltimore that you can read at a 10th grade reading level.
Sick.
Even worse, the graduating class are reading at the majority of them in Baltimore are reading at no higher than a second grade reading level. How are they supposed to put a resume together? How are they supposed to get into college? How are they supposed to get a job? They're going to wind up, these kids that are not getting the right education, they're going to wind up on a street corner with a Black Lives Matter sign, getting paid $20 an hour to protest for 2 hours a day in 4 different towns by George Soros. That's the goal of the New York State Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion program, not necessarily Soros, but it says it in the program that the goal of diversity, equity, and inclusion of these new education policies, critical race theory and all that, is to prepare students for a lifetime of civic engagement and social justice activism. Those are word for word from New York State's guidelines on what they want implemented into the curriculum. They want to train a new generation of social justice activists instead of training people who can compete in the workforce. It's going to destroy our country on the global stage. American students who are graduating are not going to get the good jobs. That's why they're going to wind up on the street corners. That's why they're going to wind up with BLM sign. That's why they're going to wind up being social justice activists instead of engineers or contractors or tradesmen, painters, you know, accountants, whatever. The important skills that you have. None of these kids know how to read. They don't know how to write. They don't know how to communicate, but they do know how to wear a little rainbow pin. And I have nothing against the homosexual community. They do know how to wear a Black Lives Matter pin. They do know how to stand there with their fist up on the street corner. They do know how to take a knee for the national anthem, but they don't know how to represent this country and advance America on the global stage. And that's going to hurt us in the long run. So if you're a parent or not, you're funding that. You have to take a stand. It's going to take more than just the parents and more than just the students. And we're seeing that on Long Island. Everybody is taking a stand now. They've all had enough. Whether you're a parent or not, they're tired of seeing kids being taken over, victimized, and used as political pawns. And the fight is only beginning, but wow, it's really heating up quick, and I'm excited.
Well, I gotta jump in there to say it was easy for me to see that no matter what they say about New York State politics and the actual body politic, that there is a lot more here being masked up and being buried than we think. In the lead up to the 2020 election, even in Westchester, the rallies that were popping up near Playland and stuff like that, what was going on obviously in Long Island and all throughout our county over here was incredible, with the trucks and with the speakers. We're talking thousands of people just spontaneously showing up. It wasn't official Trump rallies or anything like that, but people were just making themselves be heard. And when I saw that, I knew that this was a lot more. This is once again a glimpse into the reality of the situation. What is real and what is just projection? Now, because the powers that be know that there's no real way to overcome something like this that is so grassroots and organic, what they are doing, I don't know if you guys have read this, but the redistricting that is going on in New York right now, what is being proposed in the state assembly, which is going to be very hard to stop since they have all the majorities that they need, they're trying to create, because they know that the Democrat Party stands to be completely wiped out in the midterms. They're trying to create 3 new House seats in Congress in New York, including in Lee Zeldin's district. They want to turn, they have a proposal for redistricting that would turn his district from +3 Trump to +11 Biden. And they're trying to create in all blue states, they're trying to create as many new Democrat congressional seats as they can, because they know they're going to get wiped out elsewhere.
Yeah, Frank, we just talked about that on our morning live stream here at Loud Authority. We stream Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's called We Will Not Comply. We do it live 8 to 9 in the morning. We just said that my partner, Kevin, actually, we have a green screen, and he literally stood in front of some of these proposed maps because a friend of ours is running in New York 3, and his new map is ridiculous. I mean, you got to take a ferry to Westchester. It's insane. It goes from Smithtown to Westchester. I mean, how are you supposed to cover that? The way these Democrats drew these maps, and Chairman Langworthy is apparently going to sue, and we'll see where it goes. But, you know, the redistricting here is ridiculous. They always talk about they're subverting democracy, where the Republicans are suppressing the vote. They're manipulating the election. They're subverting our democracy. And by the way, we don't live in a democracy. I mean, we need to clear that up.
Yeah, so every time for someone that. Says we're
exactly every time someone says, well, you're a threat to democracy. My response is, what democracy? Because we don't live in a democracy. Show me in the Constitution where it says we live in a democracy.
There wouldn't
Show
be
the
any
Pledge of Allegiance.
There wouldn't be any redistricting going on if we lived in a democracy.
Well, first of all, that's part of the word magic brainwashing that Yuri Bezmenov was talking about there. When you want to cover all your bases, when you make some kind of an audible link between Democrat Party to democracy at large, then obviously the only thing to ever vote for, if you believe in democracy, would be the party that bears
Democrat
its name.
Party.
You know, so it's a con.
It is a con. And it's just like, you know, how Black Lives Matter doesn't really care about Black lives. Where were they when David Dorn was shot?
Yep.
Nowhere. Where were they when, Horace Lorenzo Anderson Jr. was shot and killed in Chaz in Seattle? I do remember his name. You know, they say their name.
Yep.
The only Black people that died, George Floyd was not the only one. I hate to break this to everybody. You know, Breonna Taylor was not the only one who died. Okay. Horace Lorenzo Anderson Jr. died. David Dorn died. You know, these people, you're seeing it happen all over the place. 2-year-olds, newborns being shot by stray bullets in New York City and Chicago. Where is Black Lives Matter? The concept, I'm all behind. Of course, Black Lives Matter, because all lives matter. That's my thought. Right. Of course, I believe that Black people matter. I'm not a racist. I don't do what Joe Biden does and say, well, I'm going to pick the Supreme Court justice based off their gender and their skin color. I'm going to make the first Black woman. So that means if you're a qualified white woman, you're no longer eligible in Joe Biden's eyes, not just a white woman, but a Latino woman, an Asian woman, anybody. You're no longer qualified because you're not Black. You're no longer qualified to be on the Supreme Court. That is racial discrimination. If it was happening in any other direction, this would be a major problem. Instead, we hear nothing. The mainstream media, they cover it up. Frankie, we're talking about it perfectly. They mask this stuff up. And then when you rise up in opposition, what are you? You're an insurrectionist. You're a terrorist. You're a seditionist. You know, you're all these terrible things. No, you're not. You're asking questions. The guy who says, Anthony Fauci, I am science. It reminds me of Star Wars when Palpatine, I am the Senate. I am any criticism of me is a criticism of science itself. Who the hell are you? Who is this guy, right, that all of a sudden thinks he's this emperor of science? You know, so they take the narrative, they control it, they steer the ship away from what matters, and they bring it over. They play these word games. They do these things, like you said, democracy, democracy, democracy. So now you have to vote for the Democrat Party. Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, except they took their money and spent it on mansions in Canada, right? So and Patrice Collor's, you know, BLM, by large mansions. That's what it really stands for. You know, so you see it again, Black Lives Matter, conceptually makes sense. A lot of people are going to go, yes, I agree. And then they donate the money. But where does the money go to when it goes to Black Lives Matter? We tried this 2 years ago. Act Blue funds Democrats. Democrats who run Democrat-run cities have the highest black-on-black crime. All the structural racism that we talk about, racist police departments. You got the NYPD. You got the Philadelphia Police Department. You got Minneapolis. You got Wisconsin. All those Seattle. They tell you that there's systemic racism all over the place there. Well, who has been running those cities for 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years? The Democrat Party. So if you want to change the system, if it's systemically racist, maybe changing the people who run the system might help. But this just confirms what we always said, right? That liberals are insane. Because what is insanity? It's repeating the same behaviors and expecting different results. If you keep voting for Democrats and expect it to get better regarding racism, you see over the last 80 years that it has not gotten better with Democrats in control. So stop voting for Democrats and expecting different things to happen. Liberals, stop being insane. There's no reason to keep making the same mistakes. It can't get worse. New York City, can tell me it's going to get worse in New York City? No way.
Two questions for you. Number one, if you don't mind me asking, and, you know, I know some people get offended, usually of the other gender. How old are you?
30.
Okay. You were probably too young to remember the Tea Party rallies back in the day. I don't know if you were involved then, but it, what you're talking about now in terms of what you're doing on Long Island reminds me of what happened during the Tea Party days before it got co-opted by the establishment at Long Island train stations. The Massapequa train station had thousands of people at it, thousands of them. And then they all went back to sleep. And then we ended up with, you know, what's his name? Cuomo as governor after Pataki. Yep. And New York just kind of fell to crap. Two questions for you. One, what do you think of the new mayor of New York City? Two, what do you think of Giuliani's son running for governor against Lee Zeldin?
Okay, so it is very similar to the Tea Party. I'm going to make a confession. When the Tea Party rose up, I was still a liberal. I'm a walk away. I was a liberal through high school. I was Obama 08 all the way in high school. I'm not afraid to say it because I just told you that repeating the same mistakes and expecting different things makes you insane. So I repeated that mistake only a few times and then went, wait a second, this ain't getting better. And unfortunately, my first election that I voted in for president was 2012. So I voted for Mittens. I didn't know any better at the time, but it was either him or Obama. It was a lose-lose.
Yep.
But I voted for Trump in 2016 and changed my party registration finally to Republican in 2018 just because I wanted to vote in Republican primaries, not Democrat primaries. I did have, though, the privilege in 2016, those primaries, to vote against Hillary Clinton twice. I voted for Bernie Sanders in the New York primary because I was still a registered Democrat, so I had to do it. And then I voted for Donald Trump in 2016. So I voted against her twice, and I did it legally, which is amazing. So, the new mayor of New York City, I believe, is a fraud. You hear about how he's a cop, he's this. I mean, yeah, he inherited a cluster. You know what? He inherited a disaster. It's like being the coach of the New York Jets. You're guaranteed to lose your first season. I mean, hands down, right? But, you know, I think he's made a lot of promises, but then you have this guy, Alvin Bragg, and he's not reining this guy in. Like, your district attorney is letting all this crime happen and then not prosecuting the crime. Something's going to happen there. Republican or Democrat, you got to realize this guy is a menace to society in New York City. So I think Eric Adams is a fraud. I think he's afraid to act. I think because if he does act, he's going to upset the radical left wing of his party, the part of the party that got him elected, and he's going to face political consequences. So I think he's a fraud. Number two, Andrew Giuliani. I think he's a great guy. I really do. I've met him on several occasions. I think he's a gentleman. I think he's a rising star in the GOP. He would have been, I think, better running for mayor of New York City. That name recognition in New York City may have changed things. I love Curtis Sliwa. I have a distant relation to him, actually, in terms of family. But, he just isn't who he was back when the Guardian Angels were this big presence in New York City. But I do think Andrew Giuliani would have been better off running for governor. I like the guy. Again, I love his father. I think Lee Zeldin has it in the bank because he's got Long Island. We're behind him here, and he's hit every county, I believe, in New York State at least three times, Lee Zeldin has, all while being a sitting U.S. congressman. He's still in the Army Reserves. I think Giuliani will give him a run in the city, but the rest of the state, when they find out that it's not Rudy, unfortunately, I think they're gonna go towards Lee and shy away from Andrew and even Rob Astorino, who's, again, a fine man. I just don't see him being governor of the state.
So who's going to, do you think, given the map the way it is now or whatever happens, what's going to happen when the governor's race comes up? Who are you going to have a Republican governor in New York? Do you think you could pull it out?
Well, absolutely. First of all, the governor's race has nothing to do with all the redistricting maps because it's a statewide race. So that's okay. It's the congressional seats that I'm most worried about. You know, when you look at CD3, when you look at CD1 out here on Long Island, it's going to be tough. But I will tell you this, and what I promise you, is that my group is going to have boots on the ground all campaign season long. We're going to be campaigning harder than anybody's ever campaigned in this state before. Okay, we're going to do so much hard work. We're going to outwork the Democrats. We did it in 2021 here in the local elections. We outworked them. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody saw what was happening in Nassau County coming. Nobody saw it coming in Suffolk County to the extent that it existed and to the extent that the results were. We're going to outwork them. Lee Zeldin said this on Monday up in Albany, 1 degree. He said it at a press conference. He said, you could draw all the maps you want. We are going to outwork them and they're going to be surprised. I know a lot of people say wishful thinking. There are so many people who are disenchanted and disenfranchised by the Democratic Party right now. I think even with these D+11 districts, they're not really D+11 anymore. They have turned off so many people either A, from the party itself, or B, from participating, because they just don't want to go out and vote for this inflation crap anymore. Trump's out of office. Their purpose is over. You know, their whole hateful thing is done. They can tie as many of these people to Trump as they want. They're not going to get that big anti-Trump turnout that they're hoping for, right? So draw your maps. Go ahead. Give me a challenge. We're going to put boots on the ground all day, all night, 24/7 when campaign season hits. We're going to win regardless. And I'm not afraid to say that. I know it's wishful thinking. I know there's probably people who are going to be listening going, yeah, tough luck. New York's lost cause. To that, I say challenge accepted. And just watch on November 8th of 2022, when we do elect Lee Zeldin or a Republican governor, whomever it is, because honestly, Zeldin, Giuliani, or Astorino, I think would make fine governors of the state. So it's great to have a win-win-win, but I believe it'll be Lee. And then I believe in the congressional races, we have all this momentum. We're just going to outwork them. We're going to ride the momentum of the red wave, and we're going to surprise some people. But yes, we will have a Republican governor in 22. Hands down, take it to the bank.
There you go, wow. Frank. You're hearing it straight from Captain Deplorable 45.
Well, listen, I understand the logic behind the opportunity there. When you think about the fact that, like he just said, it has nothing to do with the districts, what they're trying to create for congressional or assembly representation, that this is just taking from an entire state of what, 23 million people, when only eight million people are in the New York City area. And out of those 8 million people, not all 8 million vote, not all are even voting age, not all are even interested in voting. So when you think about what the big cities, the Buffalo area, anything like that in New York really represent compared to the overall population of 23 million, which outside of these city centers, the vast majority of New York are conservative, rural, independent thinking people. There's definitely the numbers. The numbers.
We just got to get them out.
Exactly. It's definitely there. There's no doubt about it. Let me ask you this, because Sean, there's as you said before, there's no reason not to be confident in the ability to get this done. But what we saw in 2020, there's a lot of people who are disillusioned and really pessimistic about elections at large with what we saw in 2020. On multiple layers of integrity issues, let's just call them. But in June of last year, June of 2020 is when we saw the primaries in our state, and they tried for the first time all the mail-in voting and stuff like that. And we saw hundreds of thousands of votes that had to be eliminated, especially from the New York area, which you know is mostly Democrat voters. They don't care about destroying their own. What do you think about we understand where the numbers are, how they can bear out to put a Republican governor in Albany. But what do you think about the systems that are in place right now that may compromise the election in other ways? Are you confident that there are enough poll watchers and volunteers that are ready to make sure that this is all on the up and up in local races? Or what are you feeling in that respect?
Well, that's where it's key, right? Because the biggest obstacle, honestly, that I had to and our group had to overcome going into the 2021 local elections was the fact that a lot of people did not have faith in the election system, whether it was because of things they heard about Dominion voting machines or the mail-in ballots or any accusations of fraud or election theft. And trust me when I tell you this, I believe something happened that was fishy in the 2020 election. I don't know where it was. I don't know what it was. But I 100% believe that Donald Trump won that election in a landslide and something fishy happened. If you were to ask me, gun to my head, how was it stolen or you know, manipulated, if you want to say, if you can't say the S word, I would say it absolutely happened through the mail. Ballot trucks going missing. 250 people are dumping ballots in safe or drop boxes in Georgia, running fake ballots through machines, mailing ballots that weren't folded. There are just so many questions. You know, how do you send a ballot through the mail and not fold it? And does anybody want to ask that? To me, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like back when paint and primer in one was a thing, right? I always questioned. I used to work for a paint company. That's why. And the first thing I said, how could we sell this? And the first time I saw this, I was like 10 years old. I went, well, how does the primer in the paint know to go down first? Like, can we please start using our head? Okay, it's not paint and primer in one. It's thick paint. That's all it is. It's thicker. It's not water anymore. That's why it costs three times as much, right? So, but back to the election stuff. How do you send a ballot in the mail? You're telling me 100,000 people all use the manila envelope? The key, you can't. You have to fold it up into the envelope, into the security, you know, the double envelope system there. How do you send a ballot through the mail without folding it? You can't. So how did it happen? Nobody wants to ask that question in Georgia. And after hundreds of thousands of ballots, yeah. I mean, insane.
They stole it. You can say system, that here, you know. You oh, can yeah, say whatever
stole,
you want.
They absolutely stole it. Good, good. They stole it because they stole it through the mail. And what a lot of people also don't know, you guys probably know because you're dialed in. 2019, the summer of 19 into the, you know, 2020, Mark Elias was in all of the swing states, this Democrat hack lawyer. I think he was the co-founder of Fusion GPS, tied to Spygate. He just gave a deposition or some sort of statement to Durham. I hope they're closing in on him because I don't like that guy. But he was in all the swing states, you name it, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, New Hampshire, suing to expand the absentee ballot program COVID. South Carolina, you're right. They wanted to stuff the boxes before COVID. They wanted to expand the absentee ballot program, expand the early voting program so they can manipulate the election because, my goodness, they had to find a way to get Trump out and they couldn't leave it up to the people because he was doing too good of a job. The people weren't going to let it happen. People voted. They voted for him. He gained 12 million votes on his first year total, 63 million to 75 million. You don't lose. And you're not going to tell me that this guy had 81 million votes. It didn't happen. So what you saw was all the votes stopped in the key states, and then all of a sudden they started again. And I woke up. I went to bed at 4:30 in the morning feeling good. I woke up at 7:30 saying, what the hell happened in Wisconsin? What the hell happened in Michigan? And what is this crazy map with the F line and the, you know, they all made the shirts that said fraud. We had to overcome that obstacle. And I told our group, I said, listen, if you don't think that the election is fair, that's fine. But if you think that not voting is a way to win, you're wrong. You can't win a game without scoring points. Okay. If you're playing football, you're playing baseball, you're playing hockey, you're playing soccer, whatever it is, you need to score points to win. So if you take your offense off the field and you only play defense and you just say, well, you know, the refs are going to rig it, so we're just not going to try and score touchdowns. What if the refs aren't rigging it today? Right. You're guaranteed to lose. You know, what if that off chance that nothing happened and wow, 2020 was some miraculous fair and square miracle for Joe Biden because the whole country got duped and there was no rigging. I'm not saying that was the case, but it's a what if. If you take that mentality of, well, I can't trust the system, so I'm not going to vote, you can't win. So my point is overwhelm the system. There was a lot of fraud in Nassau County. Bruce Blakeman won by 13,000 votes on election day, and that ballot, that count was down to 2,000 by the end of the process. I mean, they tried really hard. We overwhelmed them. We beat them. We had poll watchers. If you really think that election integrity is an issue, train up and be a poll watcher. Vote like hell, as if there's no cheating, as if every vote counts equally, and then get your ass in those polls and watch and stop the steal in real time. Don't you see that that's what we can do? That's how we can win. All their people count the votes. All their people work the polls. Put our people at the polls. Not to rig it, to balance it, to keep it fair, because that's how you stop it within the process instead of playing catch up after the fact.
Yep.
Because you saw what happened. The catch up game didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't work.
No, true. I mean, you know, that's something that you're seeing all over the country right now. After we're going to move to some funny stuff before we let you go, just to end on a nice light note here. But when I went in here in my county, became a GOP executive committee woman for my county to come up to the state and represent the voters here in my very large South Carolina county. And voter integrity here is a huge deal, even though, oh, Trump carried here by six or whatever and blah, blah, blah. And everyone's still saying there's tons of fraud here that nobody's paying attention to. Well, this time around, we've really mobilized people and we've got people at every single polling location this go around. Like, it's just not going to be so easy anymore. Like, it's just not going to be so easy. So I think that you're right. Like, people are like, oh, why would you vote if your vote doesn't count? You got to. You have no choice. You have to. If people didn't vote in 2020, they would have been able to just really, you know, they wouldn't have had 40% of Democrats thinking the election was rigged, which they did.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, that's a good point.
All right. Funniest thing that ever happened to you when you were doing an impression at a drive-through window?
Okay. So Taco Bell, I took Kevin, who's the other founder, one of my co-founders, a loud majority, was with me. I was driving him home and he wanted Taco Bell. So I ordered his Taco Bell, well-packed quesadillas. Okay. I had a colossal amount of hot sauce. The guy started laughing at the drive-through And I'm like, oh, this is great. So I pulled up to the window and I said to the guy, hey, you were a great sport. I said, could you tell what I was doing? And he goes, yeah, you sounded just like Trump. And I went, great. Go to TikTok. And when you're done giving me the food, follow Captain Deplorable. Look for the latest video, Trump Goes to Taco Bell, and just comment on there, I took the order. Okay? So sure enough, he does. And we look, and his avatar is a Black Lives Matter.
Oh, shoot.
So I was like, oh, my God. So I looked at Kevin, and I went, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, dude. You definitely ate shit. Like, you definitely ate saliva. So his biggest thing is goes, great, you go viral. I get a virus and get sick because I'm eating spit. But it was great. And then, you know, unfortunately, you know, the kid was a good sport. So I commented back, hey, dude, you know, I see the avatar. You know, I respect the fact that you were able to laugh, but then people got in there and slammed them and they're like, he deleted the comment. It sucks. You know, like, come on, let's just be nice to the guy. Our people went in there, well, Black Lives Matter is a comment. So I'm like, dude, can we please just laugh, all laugh together? That's how it's going to work. But I did that. He thought it was funny. That was the funniest thing that happened to me in the drive-thru for sure.
Did you, go ahead. You go.
No, keep going.
I was just going to say, did you, I don't know if it was you or one of these other guys, but I consider you to be the best one of these other guys. So did you meet?
Thank you.
No worries. Did you meet him, President Trump?
Not yet.
Okay.
I've not met him yet.
All right.
Well,
the other guy met him. His name is Rob, and he does a pretty good one. He met him at the golf place. But I mean, I know I do a better one than he does, not to be, you know, because, you know, you have to every now and then you have to say I'm the greatest at we have to just speak the real news. You know, we have to speak. We're on Tracy Beads and Dr. Light. So we do real news. And Captain Deplorable 45 is the greatest. He sounds fantastic. Believe me. What were you saying, Frank?
Well, I was going to ask you just as far as the development of, because, you know, I know that as someone who doesn't, I don't do impressions like you, but I like mimicking people. And sometimes when I really want to get a mockery down for future bits on my own show, I have to listen. I have to start breaking down the foundations of what makes the impression really glue together. And then you add all of the little mannerisms and the little seasoning on top. So how do you, if you sit down and say, you know what, I'm really going to break this one down and I want to master this voice. Did it just come out of you, or did you actually have a little bit of an approach to crafting your delivery on the voice? How did you actually build it up to where it is just so spot on?
That's a good question. And there was a process. You're right. There was a process and it did involve a lot. There was I kind of figured out that I could sound like Trump back in 2016 when he was running. I was at a work thing, our company went bowling and someone threw a strike and I just decided, let's try it. You know, we're all having a good time. Let's try it. And I said, you know, that was the greatest strike I think I've ever seen. The pins were going everywhere. You knocked them all down. It never stand a chance. It was a fantastic. We're going to build a wall in front of the pins so I can win this game. Okay. It's a racist. I started doing the whole thing. And they were laughing. Wow. It sounds like Trump. And it obviously wasn't what it is now, but I was like, it does. So I kept doing it the whole night. Then they all got mad. Stop it. Enough. Whatever. But really where I started, like you had said, there's a process listening to the small things. And this is how I usually learn all the voices. Things and accents and whatnot is to just find, you know, I guess they call them colloquialisms, right? Just his little verbal crutches and things like that. There was a drinking game for the 2016 debates. Every time Trump said, believe me, you had to take a drink. Every time he said, let me just say, he had to take a drink. Frankly, you know, all those different words, you had to take a drink. So seeing all those little words on the bingo board or whatever it was, the drinking game, and listening for them made it easier for me because I was only doing this for meeting, repeating one word. Believe me, right? I'm sitting there going, oh, he said, believe me, time to take a drink, right? I have to say, honestly, and you just start doing it. And the next thing you know, you've got that word down. So now just do the next word and the next word and the next part of the sentence in the same accent, same tone, same cadence as the honestly and his speech pattern. And you get the voice. Once you can say one sentence in it, you could turn it into another. We are going to build a wall, make America great again. It's, you know, he uses the same cadence, different phrases and things like that. It took a lot of time, a lot of watching him. But to me, I enjoyed that. You see, I don't get triggered. My skin doesn't crawl when I hear Trump. I think Orange Man good. So it's, you know, it's easier for me to learn it than a liberal who doesn't like him. But yeah, there was a process. It starts with small words. It graduates to phrases, sentences, and then, you know, I could do a whole speech for them if I want.
Do another impression. Now I got to hear something else.
Well, I'm starting to learn Rand Paul, you know, because I love the way, and this is how it started, right? So Rand Paul, he's got that Southern drawl. I love him. I've always wanted to sound like Rand Paul. But the one phrase that I've started to kind of adopt and how he does it is, you know how he grills Fauci, right? So he starts off his speeches by saying, Dr. Fauci. So he addresses them by like that. So you have to kind of get raspy. You got to get the Kentucky flowing. And then you just drop a little, Dr. Fauci, the last time you testified, you said you did not participate in gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit of draw.
But that's good.
I drifted, but it was Dr. Fauci. You know what I mean? When you do that. So, it starts that way. Cuomo. Cuomo's great. Cuomo was a good one when he was in there. Andrew Wilkow does a great Cuomo. But Cuomo was basically, we're going to New York. And he starts with New York. Then he goes, Christopher Columbus. Where are my ventilators? That sounded Southern. But then you can kind of walk in and say, I used to get a little inappropriate with my interns. I told them you may take off all of your clothes except your mask. And then, you know, the whole thing happened. We're going to take out every grandma in the state of New York, you know, things like that. So you just listen to these people and you can kind of do them. I don't have those down like I got Trump because I don't like listening to Cuomo.
I was working
like
on it. I had a Cuomo. I had a Cuomo down for a little while there. And but I'll tell you, you did Rand. I used to whip out a Ron Paul every once in a while. I haven't done it in years though now, so it's probably not that good. But it's incredible. The other thing that you just kind of triggered in me when you said that you started working on the Trump voice when you were going bowling, and it just made me think about going to Grand Prix up in Mount Kisco and bowling. You remember that? You remember being able to go bowl and put your fingers into a bowling ball? That was amazing.
And then eat French fries afterwards?
Well, I'm old enough to remember when we ate birthday cakes and we blew on them. Yeah. I mean, you remember that? Blowing out the candles. Now you do that, you're putting COVID all over the cake.
You got to finish off today with the little Australian. And everybody needs to go to CaptainDeplorable45.com and buy themselves a little message for their loved one. Keep this man going, but give us an Australian before we sign off.
Oh, I could do a little Australian. Let me think here. The other day I did something Australian. Well, let's go. We always start off Australian. Let me think. I got to roll into it.
No worries.
There was a beer from New Zealand, and their accents are very similar. It was called Spikes, and it was great. So if I roll into that, then I could probably roll into something else. But the commercial went Spikes. Pride in the South for over 125 years. Good on you, mate. We're in the great country of Australia, and they took away all of our guns. We have no more guns. The dingoes are running wild. Crikey, look at the size of that one. You know, so, you know, you draw a little Steve Irwin in there. Wow, you don't want to get too close to that one. It's going to get you like whack, and you're going to be gone forever. You know, so, but then there's the slow Australian, you know, Foster's Australian for beer. Beer. You know, you got to dig in. Australia's kind of like England, but they're having a tough like bowel movement. It sounds wow. We really had too much White Castle tonight, crikey, right? But yeah, Captain Deplorable 45.com. It's a fantastic website. I want to leave you the greatest voicemail. So though, Tracy and Frank, you know, you love it, and I love the fact that you love it. It's a fantastic thing, and you do a great thing. Believe me.
Thank you so much for everything you're doing out there to save our home state and Frank's current state. It's much appreciated. Yes. Take him up on his offer to swing by his studio. It'll be a fantastic time for you guys. And
sure thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally check out Captain Deplorable 45. Thanks for joining us today. I'm so glad that you were here.
Thank you so much, Tracy and Frank. Love you guys. And definitely, Frank, I want to come up there to Westchester. Let's do something.
Oh, you got it. I just messaged you on Instagram. I didn't even know that you followed me. Now I follow you back.
There you go. Sounds good. We'll be in touch then.
That's cool. See ya.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles quick fix on Radio Influence.
When it's all said and done, Bengals and Rams, boy, I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall watching the Bengals team watch that game yesterday, because I don't know which way they would cheer. Like, would you rather play the Rams or you rather play the 49ers? There's a lot of different ways you could look at that. Would you rather play Stafford or would you rather play against Garoppolo? And listen, We're in a Super Bowl now, and I hope everybody realizes. I like to revert back to the name of this podcast, In the Trenches. Hope everybody realizes that quarterbacks are just a piece of a puzzle. And listen, Garoppolo came a second away from making it to a Super Bowl again for the second time in 3 years. Can anybody name me 10 quarterbacks that Garoppolo's better than in the NFL? Do yourself a favor and write it down. Write down 10 quarterbacks that you would rather quarterback your team than Garoppolo, and I'd be shocked, right? And he's almost went to 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. That should tell you a little something about the quarterbacking position and what their coaches want from them. The 49ers don't ask too much from Garoppolo, and they don't get too much. And I'll be honest with you, you know, the Rams get it done. You know, that the young man, Jaquarius Tart, his last name with 2 T's, a defensive back. I'm not sure he's going to get a good night's sleep again in his lifetime. Because since he was 3 and he started playing football, I promise you, he's never got an easier interception than the one he had to end the game and put your team in a Super Bowl. Is that the reason why they ain't there? No, but I be damned. If you catch the ball, if it's out in the street, and you throw that ball to Jaquarius 100 times, I think he catches it 100 times, okay? Literally. But that's what they're playing for. So pressure is a son of a bitch.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.